SDK. Welcome to Business Life After Hours, a podcast that takes a deep dive into real-life topics at the intersection of business and life. After the workday ends, that's where we pick up. For decades, he's changed the way we barbecue and is giving great respect to the grill. He truly has built and launched a barbecue revolution. Make that the barbecue revolution. I welcome Stephen Reichlin, barbecue griller extraordinaire, to Business Life 360 and Business Life After Hours. Stephen, it's so great to be with you today.
Well, it's lovely to be here with you too.
Thank you so much. Now, you have such a broad breadth of experiences in the world of grilling. So talk to us about your super fascinating upbringing and some of the things that you've done that have brought you to where you are today.
Oh boy. Well, I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. In my family, my mother was the grill master. She used to light the charcoal with gasoline. She was wanted to get to business right away. And her specialty was what we called Pittsburgh rare steak. So it was burnt coal black on the outside and the heart was still beating inside.
Were you loving that when you were growing up?
It was great. Okay. It was great. Let's see, I have a very unusual training for a career in writing in barbecue and making barbecue television. I was a French literature major in college. While I was writing my thesis on a medieval poet named Christine de Pizan, Europe's first feminist, by the way, I came across a medieval cookbook in the stacks at Reed College, and it blew my mind. I thought, like, 800 years ago, people were writing cookbooks, and writing is the operative word, you know, because it was all manuscript back then. So that led me on a voyage of discovery with a Watson Foundation Fellowship to Europe, where I explored the intersection of food and history and culture. And in a way, I've been doing that ever since. Mm-hmm. Now, barbecue, I came to barbecue probably 30 years ago with a simple but profound idea, and that is that people grill the world over, but everywhere they do it differently. So wouldn't it be cool to travel around the world, document how people grill in different countries and cultures? The result of that four-year adventure was a book called The Barbecue Bible. Mm-hmm. The right book, the right time, became an international bestseller, and that's how I got into barbecue.
So Stephen, what was missing in barbecue when you came on the scene?
You know, when I came on the scene, barbecue was this kind of inchoate mass of superstitions, tradition. I do it because my daddy did it that way. I don't think anyone had ever kind of tried to take a scientific approach. And I approached barbecue like I approach cooking, the way I do language, which is there's a grammar and a set of rules by which you do it, and there's a vocabulary, set of ingredients that you use to cook with. And what I tried to do with Barbecue Bible and my other books is really impose an order and a logic to what had been a very disorderly field.
Mm-hmm. That is so true. And because of that, you got so many people interested. And I feel like that really kind of planted the seed for so many people to say, wow, this is really easy for me to understand. This is really something I can get excited about. And you've really done that. And you have such a breadth of creativity in your life. And I want to talk a little bit about that. You've written, is it 32 books now?
Actually, number 33 is about to go to the printer.
Oh, I love it. Tell us about 33.
So 33 is actually a departure from barbecue. It's a book called Project Griddle. And it's about these new stand-up griddles and planchas that are turning up in American backyards. It's another way to cook outdoors. You can place a griddle on a barbecue grill, which is kind of was my gateway into griddling, but there's a lot you can do on a griddle that you can't do on a grill, starting with breakfast. Mm-hmm. Eggs, for example, or very fragile fish like snapper or wahoo, I guess I should say, out here. Or even fried rice, for example. You can't do fried rice on a grill, but you can sure do it on a griddle.
Mm-hmm. So this never-ending, creative, and fascinating side of you, what's the process that you use when you're coming up, whether it's a TV show, you're writing for the New York Times, all the things that you're doing, writing books. How do you start and generate new content as you do all the time?
You know, I have a very active mind and a very active imagination. And while I am not great with names or faces, and my wife gives me a list of things to do, and I go back 5 minutes later and say, what'd you say, honey? But when it comes to food, I can remember most of my meals, and I'm constantly thinking about flavor combinations I spend 4 months a year traveling, and I get a lot of ideas from my travels. I keep a notebook by my bed. You know, sometimes I'll dream of something and wake up the next morning, and there it is.
You have to have that brain dump. You have to write things out.
Constantly scribbling notes.
Always thinking about the next thing, the next idea.
Yeah.
I love that. Now, you also have your own seasonings and grilling accessories. Tell us about some of those.
Well, the seasonings, they're sold under the Planet Barbecue brand. That's sort of my umbrella company for products. And really, I mean, this is a business show. I'm such a dumb businessman that I gave the formulas for all my spices in my books, right? So you can open any one of my books and find my coffee rub or my Mediterranean herb rub. But, you know, for some people, they want the convenience not of having to combine 12 ingredients that six of which you might not have on hand, but you can reach for a bottle of barbecue rub. With regards to the tools, I always felt like barbecue tools were designed by industrial designers and not by people who actually grill. So when I designed my grill gloves, for example, I made them come up past the elbows because, you know, 1,000 times I've had to reach my hand over a hot grill and you want to protect your forearm.
That's brilliant.
Really, you know, kind of practical driven.
Practical and so useful. Do you remember the first time you grilled something?
I don't remember the food, but I do remember the mistakes, because when I first started grilling, there were many of them.
This will be good.
And I remember one in particular where, you know, guys have this weird thing in our brain, which goes like, if some is good, more is better. So I loaded a charcoal grill with charcoal, and I figured, well, okay, the recommended amount is X, so I'll use 3X, because that'll be even more fantastic. And of course, I had turned the grill into a blast furnace, and anything I brought near it burned to a crisp.
You know, I was going to ask you, were there any pyrotechnics involved in your childhood or anything of that nature?
It's funny you should ask. I was a bit of a pyromaniac when I was a kid.
I had a hunch.
Yeah, so there was one episode with a paper cup full of gasoline that might have gotten lit on a sidewalk, and policemen might have come to our house, and I might have hid under the bed. Then there was the model ship and airplane period when I would put firecrackers and airplane glue inside of them, build these elaborate models, and then set them on fire and make them explode. So I guess you could say in my adult life, I kind of found a way to channel that into a more constructive
and safe
activity. Yeah.
Safer. Yes. You are the consummate example of having a passion, turning it into a talent, and then really turning it into success. And I think that's a lesson I'm getting from you and have gotten from you through all these years and really watching how you've continued to grow and really impact and influence a generation. So I just want to say thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, Julia Child once gave me some great advice about book writing. She and I both lived in Cambridge. I had been to her house. She had been to my apartment. And she said, you know, I wrote my first 5 books were kind of books that anybody could have written. And she said, pick a subject that a lot of people are interested in, and then find an approach that you and only you can do. Well, for me with barbecue, you know, that subject was barbecue, because everybody loves barbecue, not just here, but all over the world. But at the same time, my approach is the global grilling, and I've been to 75 countries on 6 continents, and I suspect that there is not another person that has done that, or if there is, didn't start as a French literature major. So, you know, that brought, you know, a certain discipline and writing skills that that I think maybe have, you know, helped kickstart my career.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice from Julia Child.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why barbecue and not another niche then? Was it the need you saw and all of these things that you're describing about how unique that is across the globe? Is that what kept you going in that particular niche?
You know, it was, I came to it late. I had written many, I'd probably written 15 books about other subjects. But when I found barbecue, I felt like I was home. And I think the reason is that it brings together so many of my interests. I mean, first of all, setting stuff on fire. Second of all, having the Y chromosome, you know, guys like to stand at the grill. I love flavor, and there's nothing like grilling to bring out flavor. Mm-hmm. I don't like fat and unhealthy food, and grilling is a very healthy method of cooking, right? Because it reduces the fat. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, my love of travel comes into it with this Planet Barbecue idea. The writing, I mean, I like to joke that, you know, in my books, I write the books for the pros and people buy them for the recipes. But if you look at a typical Stephen Reichlin cookbook, it's probably 30% prose. It's stories of my travels. It's the history of barbecue. It's all these things that turn me on. So it was really the, it was just the perfect field for my interests.
I love all of the ventures, too, that you've built into this career of yours. Even things like restaurants on cruise lines. How about that? That's pretty exciting. How did you get involved with that?
Like so many things that have happened in my life, it began with a phone call from the food and beverage manager of the Windstar Cruise Line. And they were embarking on a very interesting project. They were cutting three of their ships in half and adding an extra 100 feet. And in that 100 feet, and besides additional staterooms, they were adding an outdoor restaurant. And it was going to be a grill restaurant. And they wanted to know if I would be willing to create the Star Grill by Stephen Reichlin restaurants on these ships. Well, you know, I mean, twist my arm, pretty interesting. And in fact, posed some really interesting challenges, because according to international maritime law, you cannot have open flame on a cruise ship. Now, open flame is what I'm all about. But we did devise some workarounds, and when you taste our pastrami or our brisket at the Star Grill, it is indeed kissed with real wood smoke. It's got that real authentic barbecue flavor. But you know, what I love about my job, and being freelance and self-employed is not for everybody, right? Because, you know, sometimes you never know where your next paycheck is going to come from.
You don't work, you don't get paid.
Exactly. But every day there's a phone call and some new opportunity. I mean, in fact, like the phone call inviting me here to Toledo for this wonderful event. So it's in the last year, let's say I've been to Abu Dhabi to keynote a barbecue festival. I went to Switzerland to consult for a company that wanted to develop barbecue flavors. I'm here in Toledo. I mean, so, you know, you never know what the next phone call is going to bring.
That's because you're so good at what you do that people say, who better?
Oh, shucks.
Well, listen, tell us more about your favorite dish to grill. If you had to pick one.
Okay. Hard to do, since I have written, I think, somewhere on the order of 4,000 recipes. But I've got the perfect one for you.
Yes.
It's called Caveman T-Bone, and it sums up everything that Stephen Reichlin is. So, first of all, I'm very fascinated by the history of barbecue. In fact, I'm working on a documentary on the history of barbecue. And 1.8 million years ago, a distant human ancestor called Homo erectus discovered that you could cook food with fire. And that was the single most important technological leap forward in human history. Why is that? Because cooked meat is so much easier to metabolize than raw meat. So within the space of 100,000 years, our brain size quadrupled, our jaws shrunk, our tongues became more agile, we developed the gift of speech, and really, barbecue made us human. We started cooking communally, eating communally. All of these behaviors that define modern man began with that first act of cooking food with fire. That's a very long, complicated introduction to a dish that is extremely simple. You build a charcoal fire, okay? You take the grill grate and you throw it away like a frisbee. You don't need a grill grate. You fan the coals to dislodge any loose ash. You season that thick T-bone steak with salt and pepper, nothing else. Lay it directly on the coals. At this point, your guests will think you're absolutely crazy. You've taken a $50 steak and you're about to burn it to a cinder. You cook it on both sides. It's about 3 minutes per side. And just like people who walk on live coals and, you know, their feet come out intact, well, the steak also comes out intact. But you get this incredible crunchy crust and haunting smoke flavor. And then I like to top it with what I call a hellfire hot sauce. You lay a skillet on those same coals while the steak is resting, because you always want to rest your meat before you cut into it. And you fry jalapeno chilies, cilantro, and garlic in olive oil. And you pour that screaming, sizzling hot mixture over your caveman T-bone. What is that? That's a five-ingredient dish that will blow your mind and you'll want to eat forever.
So hungry right now. Would you come over and cook that for me?
Why not?
I think if I do that, it's not going to taste the same. What is one of the most novel and unusual recipes you've ever created?
Well, the caveman T-bone is also pretty novel and unusual, I think we'd have to be, I think we'd have to be in the dessert realm for that. Mm. And for a book I wrote 5 or 6 years ago called Project Smoke, and it was a book about smoking, and it came from another simple but in a way profound realization, which is all barbecue is smoked, but not all smoked foods are barbecue. Okay, so that set me, because I had the barbecue part mm-hmm. pretty well covered in previous books, but other smoked foods, everything from smoked salmon to pastrami, you know, that was all new. Anyhow, so in the dessert chapter, I smoked ice cream. And again, that was one of those crazy ideas that came to me in the middle of the night. And what I did is I froze a block of ice, and then I unmolded a pint of vanilla ice cream on top of it, right? So the ice would keep it cold.
I'm listening.
Put it on a charcoal grill. I triple loaded the wood chips on the fire because I wanted a lot of smoke fast before the ice cream had a chance to melt. And at the end of 3 or 4 minutes, the ice cream took on this gorgeous golden patina of wood smoke. You bite into it, and it tastes exactly like a toasted marshmallow. So it's been, and it's it never fails to blow people's minds. It's sort of impossible, and yet we did it.
Is that a fan favorite?
Yeah, that's a fan. Mm-hmm. That's a Reichland family favorite.
I mean, I just think we need to pause and just think about grilled desserts right now for
yeah.
a second.
Yeah,
just
yeah, yeah.
hold that thought.
Absolutely. Well, then, you know, in my repertory, there's the bacon bourbon apple crisp,
Hello.
Which I believe people in Toledo are going to be tasting pretty soon.
Nice.
And then in the new book, there's peppered pineapple, where I made a black pepper sugar rub, put it on pineapple, and seared the pineapple on a screaming hot griddle. And that's pretty awesome, too.
Wow. Oh, yes.
Yep.
Is there anything you don't like grilling? Or anything you can't grill?
Well, you know, I would have said sushi, but in fact, there's a type of sushi that you hit with a blowtorch to bring the fat out of the tuna belly. So I have grilled sushi. We talked about grilled ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
I have a whole chapter on grilled cocktails in Project Smoke. I might have said seaweed, but in fact, the Koreans take nori seaweed, you know, you use for wrapping sushi,
mm-hmm.
brush it with sesame oil, and they toast it over a live fire, over hibachi. So I think I've yet to find a food you can't grill.
Is there something we should know about you that we don't know?
Yeah, absolutely. So most people know me for my books about barbecuing and grilling. I wrote a novel. It's a novel called The Hermit of Chappaquiddick. I live on Martha's Vineyard half the year. And it's a foodie love story set on this magical island. And I won't tell you what happened, but in a funny way, that's the book about which I'm most proud of, maybe because it's a departure from what I usually do.
Mm-hmm. Can't wait to read it.
It's on Amazon. Mm-hmm.
First piece of advice that you give to the novice griller.
Well, the first piece of advice is go buy the Barbecue Bible and log on to barbecuebible.com, because that is a source of infinite wisdom about barbecuing and grilling. Sign up for my Up and Smoke newsletter. It's free, comes out twice a week. But after that, I would give you a couple pieces of advice. First of all, I have a little mantra which goes, keep it hot, keep it clean, keep it lubricated. That is, for most grilling, start with a hot grill, clean it with a stiff wire brush or wooden scraper, and oil it with a folded paper towel dipped in oil drawn apart across the bars of the grate, which not only prevents sticking, but also gives you killer grill marks. So that's one piece of advice. Another core piece of advice is don't overcrowd the grill. Now, this is another Y chromosome trait. You know, we tend to like, some is good, more is better. So you're cooking chicken wings. You cover every square inch of the grill grate with chicken wings. And what happens is when you get a flare up or something starts to burn, you panic because you have no place to go. So I always use the 2/3, 1/3 rule. 2/3 of the grill with food, 1/3 of the grill food free. So you have a safety zone where you can move the food.
Nice.
1/3 piece of advice, and these are short, supposed to be short answers, but I'm not a short answer kind of guy. If you're going to cook one thing to start with, I would start with a pork shoulder. Why is a pork shoulder? Because you can cook it low and slow like barbecue. You can roast it hot and fast. You can spit roast it. It's incredibly forgiving. It's almost impossible to overcook a pork shoulder.
What would you say is the most impactful book you've written?
I think the most impactful book is a book called How to Grill. And it resulted from a third Y chromosome trait, which is the inability to ask questions at the appropriate time. So I would give talks and about barbecue and any questions. Look out, sea of men, women would raise their hands, ask very smart questions. Guys, nothing. After the talk was over and I was headed out to the parking lot, you know, tugging my sleeve, my steaks are always tough, my fish sticks to the grill grate, why does my chicken always catch fire? So I realized that I needed to write a book that would show people step by step with color photos how to grill everything. That book became How to Grill. It was my first million copy bestseller. It's been translated in 18 languages around the world.
That's amazing.
And it really, if you're just starting out, it will walk you through how to build a fire, and it's that's probably my most impactful book.
Mm-hmm. And we have the Barbecue Bible here.
Right. Okay.
Another great one.
That was my first one.
Mm-hmm.
So the book of which I'm most proud is the first book, Barbecue Bible.
Mm-hmm. Kind of where it all started.
That's where it all started for me, yeah. And it's kind of a funny backstory on that. I don't know if we have time for
we
it.
Do.
But
sure.
So this idea that grilling is universal, but we do it differently everywhere. So I thought, all right, it's going to be a quick, easy book. I'll knock it out, visit 10 countries, you know, maybe 75 recipes, knock it out in a year. Well, it grew to this 537-page monster with more than 500 recipes. Took me 4 years to write. I actually wrote three other cookbooks during those 4 years to be able to finance all the travel for this book. But it, too, became an international bestseller and really got me into barbecue. So that's the story.
I love that story. It's
yeah.
a great one.
Yeah.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit more now about some rapid-fire questions that have to be kind of quick answers. And we just want to know a few more things about you.
Yes.
Okay. You said you spend some of your time in Martha's Vineyard.
Yes.
Has the East Coast inspired and influenced your recipes?
Absolutely. First of all, I divide my time between Miami and Martha's Vineyard. And I'm a water guy. I have a sailboat, I have a motorboat. So you will find very large fish chapters, seafood chapters in all of my books.
Mm-hmm.
I love the water.
One thing that you have yet to do that you need to do in your life?
Have yet to write a memoir. However, I have a proposal for a memoir and I've been working on it. And it will tell how a guy with a degree in French literature became the barbecue king of the planet.
One misnomer about barbecue.
Barbecuing and grilling are two very different activities. Barbecue is cooked low and slow, always in the presence of wood smoke. Grilling is a high heat, direct method, done very fast for tender pieces of meat. And when I started in this business, people did not make the difference. I think today people sort of understand the difference.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, Stephen Reichlin, world-renowned PBS star, television host, barbecuer extraordinaire, all the wonderful things you've done for grilling. Thank you, thank you. It's great to have you on Business Life 360 and as a part of Business Life After Hours. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.
Business Life After Hours is hosted and produced by Christy Kay. Audio engineering, production, and editing by Chris Pfeiffer. Be sure to join Christy for her award-winning television series, Business Life 360, the third Thursday of the month on WGTE HD or at wgte.org/b360. Business Life After Hours is a production of WGTE Public Media.